Chapter 21.
Slow down, Troy. I'm not as young as I was.
But the 10-year-old, slim, lithe, wearing only a kind of loincloth, was an explosion of energy.
Come on, Grandad. Fun. Come see horses, spinies, elephants.
And holding Nelson's hand, he tried to haul him deeper into the traverse's innards.
Now, Troy, gentle with Grandad.
Troy's mother was called Lucille. As far as Nelson could tell, she was a permanent partner for Sam. It obscurely pleased him that Troy was growing up with at least a semblance of a normal family around him, that he knew who his mother and father were. Not that Nelson was judgmental about such things. After all, it had struck him the first time he visited the island with Lobsang that in such a small community, relationships were necessarily going to be flexible, moral judgments pragmatic. Now Lucille, short and pretty, was quietly admonishing her son.
Besides, under, quiet. Look at other children. Little Mole, Rosita, Parker. Quiet, under. Good as gold.
They were all in a chamber of a very organic kind, with smooth, curving, enclosing walls, grown, into complicated shapes. It was like being inside some vast seashell. Nelson was a big man. He towered over these compact islanders, and he had to duck to avoid thumping his head, but the chamber was surprisingly roomy. And the light from overhead, coming through layers of translucent traverser carapace and filtered through seawater, was a bright, oceanic blue-green. They had indeed submerged. He briefly wondered about insects, flies, spiders, ants, termites. It was hard to imagine them trooping two by two into the traverser's natural holds, yet such creatures were necessary for any functioning ecology. He imagined they had evolved their own ways to survive these periodic inundations. Meanwhile, those taken into the traverser's great belly were safe. He looked around the chamber, where the people milled around, set out blankets, talked quietly. Among other vocations, Nelson had once been an engineer, of software at least, and he tried to think that way now. How did the traverser work? This dry, air-filled room must serve as a buoyancy chamber, doubling as an airtight shelter for the animal inhabitants and the people. The air smelled fresh enough, though there was an odd, salty, organic tang to it, like seaweed maybe. He wondered how long the air would last, in fact. Probably a good while. The island, a mile long, must be riddled with air-filled chambers like this to be able to float at all. And maybe, he mused, the traverser had some ingenious way to replenish the air it stored. And now, it seemed, his grandson was determined to be his guide on a tour of some of those chambers.
Oh, Troy, leave poor Grandad alone.
I'll be fine, Nelson said, lowering his voice to the soft level that seemed to be assumed by everybody else in here. Underwater. Under. I'm glad of a chance to see all this. Don't worry. I won't let him wear me out.
Well, all right. Just this once. No tread on good boys and girls, napping like supposed to. Won't. Come on, Grandad.
They made their cautious way across the chamber's uneven floor, stepping over people with smiles and apologies. As Lucille had said, the drill seemed to be for people to settle down in little family groups, sitting, lying down, talking softly. Some of the children were napping, curled up with each other or against their parents. Others were playing quiet games with shells and beads and boards scratched onto sheets of what looked like eucalyptus bark.
Makes sense, Nelson whispered to Troy.
What, Grandad?
For everybody to be sitting still and sleeping. Makes the air last longer.
Troy looked puzzled, but Nelson was pleased that he seemed to be trying to figure that remark out, rather than dismissing it or arguing about it. Nelson supposed most of the island's human population must be gathered in this one place. In the gloom, it was hard to count heads, but he estimated there must be about 100. There couldn't be many less to provide a population genetically diverse enough to stay stable across the generations, a diversity aided by the occasional injection of genes from outside, like his own, he reflected with some embarrassment. On the other hand, there wasn't room for many more. As far as Nelson could gather, the people practiced abstinence or used non-penetrative sex or withdrawal methods, and it seemed there were various contraceptive treatments available from the island flora. None of these methods was accident-proof, of course, but overall the people seemed to be able to keep their numbers in reasonable balance. Nelson had wondered, but hadn't inquired, if, in the course of surviving booms and crashes and food shortages in the past, they'd learned the hard way how to keep the population size down. Certainly having a short life expectancy helped, as Sam had observed. The old vanished gracefully, leaving room for the young. Nelson tripped over somebody's leg in the dark. Again, he'd become lost in his maundering.
Grandad, careful!
I'm sorry, Troy. You lead the way. I'll watch my feet. Troy led Nelson, always just a little too quickly, up and down ramps and through short corridors, and they pushed on through more chambers, many just as roomy as the big dormitory, but mostly empty. It was all very organic, the walls smooth and curving with no edges at floor or ceiling, and short connecting passageways shaped like back-to-back trumpets, smoothly leading off from one chamber to the next. Nelson was undoubtedly crawling around within the anatomy of a living creature, and a far greater one than he was. He felt minuscule. Closest to the upper carapace, the overhead chambers, translucent and allowing through the greenish light, were all filled with scummy water. Nelson wondered if the plankton and other organisms growing in there were encouraged in order to replenish the oxygen of the inner air, as he had speculated. And for the plankton, he supposed, protection from the browsing creatures of the sea was the reward for their dribble of oxygen. In some of the lower levels, Nelson came across a still stranger sight. The underside of the island, when it was visible, was complex, encrusted with huge shapes, some of them big tubes with blobs of green stuff growing at the ends. This arrangement baffled Nelson, but Troy seemed to know all about it.
Dolphins, whales, little ones, porpoises, swim in for food, wiggle and wiggle in tubes.
And Nelson thought he saw it. Maybe this was a mechanism, one of several perhaps, that the island used when it needed to move through the water. It lured the big sea mammals into these food-providing tubes, and in return for the snacks that grew there, the animals swam their hearts out, gradually pushing the island the way it wanted to go. Shelter in return for an air supply, food in return for locomotion. The whole arrangement reeked of smartness, Nelson thought, as they wandered on, smart bits of naturally evolved engineering as all parts of this strange symbiotic creature laboured in harmony to support the whole. And yet he saw no evidence of anything like a central nervous system, no nerve trunks, no spinal cord. Nelson suspected that Lobsang, who knew far more about these matters than Nelson did, of course Lobsang knew more about almost anything than almost anybody, might have said that Nelson was being parochial. The traversers appeared to have descended from colony creatures, from communities of living things. A traverser needed to think, but to do that, it didn't need anything like a human or indeed a mammalian brain. Perhaps the traverser's consciousness emerged from a network of interactions, of its onboard community of living organisms. Take those plankton communities in the upper chambers. On one level, each algal cell was busily looking after its own business of feeding and reproducing, while on another level, an algal community was itself a very complex network. Similarly, aboard the traverser, a dwarf horse uprooting a mouthful of long grass was eating lunch, but at the same time, that very action could be a thought of a higher consciousness. Maybe multi-species cooperation and cohabitation were actually the norm in the long Earth, indeed the norm for terrestrial life. Even during his time on the island, Nelson had witnessed different species of dolphins swimming together. And during the journey of 30, Valienti and Lobsang had even reported discovering, some 900 steps from home, a group of hominid species of variant forms, the product of diverse stepwise evolutions, happily living side by side. Once, Nelson supposed, you might have witnessed such scenes on the datum itself, but in the course of its inglorious career, Homo sapiens had pretty much seen off any cousin species closer than the chimps. And, isolated, humans had come to believe that ruthless competition, even the extermination of rivals, was inevitable. Nelson was determined to discuss all this with Lobsang when he got the chance. If Nelson himself survived the trip back, if Lobsang ever emerged from his latest electronic womb. He heard the whinny of a horse. The animals were close. They came to a chamber containing a group of mammoths, apparently dwarfed, but still an astonishing sight to Nelson. From what he remembered of his paleobiology, these were more like Colombian mammoths, low-latitude browsers, than the woolly variety adapted to colder climes. They seemed to be a group of females and young. The adults stood together, twining trunks and gently clashing tusks, while the young sheltered under their feet. There was a puddle of water for them to drink, in a hollow in the floor, but no food that Nelson could see. Their rumbling voices were like the rolling of boulders. This chamber seemed large to Nelson, but was presumably claustrophobically small to wild animals, especially plains animals like mammoths, certainly far smaller than many zoo compounds Nelson had seen. Yet the animals waited for their release as calmly as the humans in their dormitory. He wondered now if there was something in the air, a gentle tranquilizer evolved by the traverser to keep its inhabitants subdued while they were confined. On some traversers, such as the very first Joshua and Lobsang had discovered, on a world much further out than this, the animal specimens were kept almost anaesthetized, it seemed. Within the bulk of the creature they had called first-person singular, the travellers had seen birds, small animals, even elephants like these immersed in some kind of fluid, neither awake nor asleep, neither walking nor swimming. Perhaps there was a whole range of such storage strategies. No one knew. The traversers, he reflected, carried some strange beasts, but none so strange as themselves. With Troy leading him on tiptoe, Nelson wandered on. They found horses, small and hairy, and what looked like wombats, what looked like armadillos, what looked like sloths. An eclectic mix of creatures, many of them extinct on the datum Earth, yet presumably prospering still on this world and its stepwise neighbours. It was the nearest he could imagine to a realisation of Noah's Ark. Every so often he glimpsed something smaller, a rat, a mouse. But he and Lobsang had long ago concluded that this collection, if there was any purpose behind it at all, was the result of a strategy to select animals with a body weight of around an adult human's, give or take an order of magnitude. The mice and rats were just as much visitors here as Nelson was. But he and Lobsang, he remembered, could only guess as to the meaning of all this. Lobsang had suspected that the traversers, once natural creatures, the products of Darwinian evolution, had been modified, engineered subtly for some conscious purpose. "Perhaps they are indeed collectors," Lobsang had once mused. "Latter-day Darwins, or their agents, scooping up interesting creatures for, well, for science? To populate some tremendous zoo? Simply for their aesthetic appeal?" But such conversations had taken place a long, long time ago, and Nelson still had no answers. The horses whinnied and stirred, and Nelson felt the traverser itself shudder and rock. It was a queasy, massive sensation, like riding out a mild earthquake. He felt Troy's hand slip into his own.
"Troy, are you all right?"
"Yes."
But the boy didn't sound convinced.
"Does it often do this, the traverser?"
"Not often. Sometimes upset."
"By the storm?"
"Not storm."
"What then? Oh, look, never mind. Come on. Shall we go back and find your mum and dad?